Our next case this morning is United States against Trejo Pazuran.
May it please the court, my name is Patrick Stern. I'm the attorney for Antonio Trejo Pazuran, who is the defendant appellant in this matter. This matter resulted in a drug conviction down in Evansville in front of the Honorable Judge Young. Three issues are raised. The first issue that is being raised is the so-called expert testimony of Special Agent Caress. And at the time of trial, Special Agent Caress was supposed to aid the jury in certain drug language. Although what they seem to call drug language was amongst a number of Hispanic individuals who spoke totally in Spanish. The Spanish was then translated into a large number of tapes, and the government then submitted a number of tapes to the jury. The jury was provided with tape transcripts that were, which relate to issue number two and number three, where the people who allegedly gave the statements names were associated with. But as it relates to issue one, it's our position that one, Special Agent Crest was nowhere near an expert in the field of drug code language, and in fact, there really isn't a drug code language.
Mr. Stern, I think your problem here is that we've already ruled in the earlier case involving the co-defendant that the district court didn't abuse its discretion in permitting Agent Kress, the very same agent that we're talking about here, to offer expert testimony on the meaning of the conversations. So, are you saying you want us to overrule our decision?
Both overrule it, and I think that the decision, in Cervales 1, I think there was some indication that, and I'm not in disagreement with Your Honor in the fact that the mere fact that the translation went from Spanish to English, and Agent Crest did not speak Spanish, it doesn't lose enough. But the problem is, I think he also ruled in back in 1989 in the case that was cited in my brief into that under the Jones versus Hanelman case, and you said in order for there to be an expert, for somebody to be an expert, before you get the label on your head that says you're an expert, there has to be some reading, extensive reading in the publishing, peer review, and you cited about five or six cases. And in order for somebody to come in as an expert, they have to do something. They have to be somebody.
Well, he's an agent.
That doesn't mean anything, Your Honor.
Oh, well.
To me,
I think you should go to your second
If I might just continue, I don't mean it doesn't make him an expert on everything. He's an agent. He's a special agent of the FBI, but that does not mean that he is an expert on radar installations during World War II. Now, if he asks, they have to establish it. They want him to testify on how his service revolver operates. That's an expertise. Drug code language, so-called Spanish. Just because he's an agent doesn't mean he can translate Spanish. Just because you're a UN translator doesn't mean you can translate Hebrew or Greek. You might be able to translate whatever language. But there's nothing in the record, and I don't want to take away from my other arguments, but there was nothing in the record to establish that this man had done anything other than to be an agent. And the fact is, when you call him an expert, and I think that the courts have ruled that it's not the purpose of the expert to observe the jury. In this case, he's not only translating what might be normal code language. And code language might mean heroin can commonly be called horse, smack, but he's going on to say, well, I think this guy means this, I think this guy means that. I think that's not translating drug code language. And there was very little drug code language, if any, and I think what drug code language would probably be considered as slang. The next issue relates to Ms. Reardon going in as an agent of the federal government through her dealings with her corporation and getting voice exemplar testimony from a client, a defendant, a person that had been arrested. This man was not going anywhere. This was not a stop, it was a common stop of a police officer pulling you over and saying, do you have a driver's license? Do you have registration? This man was not going anywhere. This man was going to custody. And Ms. Reardon, as an agent of the government, came in and was getting voice exemplar data. She had already She had already transcribed the tapes. She had listened to hundreds of these tapes. What she needed to do at this point in time was be able to match voices with the people on the tape. Mr. Trejo was brought in on an interview. And I point out, she was not from pretrial services to try to get preliminary data. She was an agent of the government.
You know, you yourself cited the Dionato case and conceded that it holds that people don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in their voices. How would you distinguish this case?
Okay, Dionato is correct. In the holding that in the court have said a number of times, over and over again, that non-intrusive, the judges can order non-intrusive evidence. They can order hair samples, DNA, they can order blood, they can order sperm, they can order voice exemplars, they can order fingerprints. But the problem you have here is nobody went to a judicial officer and said, "Judge, I have reasonable to believe based on this testimony, I need this." That we are bringing a case against this individual, and we need to find out whether he was the rapist in 700 other cases. We need DNA. We need a swab. The problem is they sent an agent in to investigate. Had they have asked Judge Young or Magistrate Hausman for permission for a voice exemplar, and the judge said, "Yes, you presented me a..."
If ever there was anything that you don't need, it would be a warrant, a subpoena, etc., to listen to the defendant's voice. A person's voice, just like his face or his physical appearance or handwriting, are held out to the public.
I understand that, but Mr. Trejo had no opportunity. If there was an attorney there, I would have told him to say nothing. I wouldn't let him say anything. The problem was the government brought him in front of one of their agents. That the government specifically brought him in front of their agent to obtain evidence. That's the problem, Your Honor. That I'm not saying that they couldn't obtain that evidence, but they had to obtain it through a judicial order, either a warrant, a subpoena. And that happens all the time, Your Honor.
Go ahead.
I'm saying that the judges have that authority. I'm not disputing that the judges can order anything that's fairly non-intrusive. They can order DNA or anything else like that. But the problem was that they wanted to obtain evidence. They wanted to do a voice exemplar, and they wanted to match this individual's voice to the voice on the tape. They specifically, now Mr. Trejo didn't have an opportunity to leave. He didn't have an opportunity to be given an attorney. He was pretty much put into a room with a lady that he did not know. He never met her. He never saw her, and started asking him questions. Now the judge in his ruling said that the purpose of hers was to obtain background information. It's my position that the judge's decision was just wrong, that she was there to get, and through her testimony, she was there as a government agent to obtain evidence. And it was not for background information. If, Your Honor, which is common in a federal drug prosecution, is that the people, the detainees are brought in for pretrial service, which is an officer of the court to try to obtain preliminary information. They want to know. The judge is going to have to know what to do with them, whether they're going to grant bond or whether to detain them. And that's perfectly acceptable. And in most cases, the decision whether you want to speak to them for as far as an attorney makes a big difference. If a person is going to go home, you need to be very cooperative with them. But the person comes in and they start taking this information. And obviously, if my client, Mr. Trejo, would have came in and said, "Gee, I saw you on America's Most Wanted," that would have been perfectly acceptable. The problem here is the government specifically put him in front of Mr. Reinierden to obtain evidence. And that's the problem here, is that the government did this. He didn't have an opportunity. Now, if somebody from pretrial services to obtain information, she was not from pretrial services. She was not there to obtain background information. She was not there to help him in any way. She was not there to aid the court in any way. She was there to aid the United States government in their prosecution of my client. And that is impermissible. If they want to obtain evidence from fingerprints, DNA, all you have to do is file a motion with the judge, and the judges routinely sign them. And they could have done that. They could have asked for him to provide a voice exemplar.
What case are you relying on? Because I want to go back and read it.
I'm taking the reverse. I'm looking right at the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. You have a reasonable expectation against unreasonable search and seizure. The Fourth Amendment clearly lays out, it deals with warrantless searches of one's home. It's given the most protection. Now,
Giannasso is a 1973 United States Supreme Court case, and it holds that people do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in their voices. Doesn't that end it?
Absolutely correct. I'm not disputing the case, Your Honor. What I'm saying is that they can't send an agent in to obtain it. It would be the same as putting an individual in with a federal prosecutor to try to get a confession out of them. It would be the same as a jailer saying, I know this man's got an attorney, you better get the police over here before the attorney tells him to shut up. The problem is not in obtaining the voice. That's not the problem, Your Honor. The problem is the way it was done. And the way it was done was by an officer of the United States government who was interviewing a person who was not going anywhere except to jail, except to go to trial, and except to be put in front of a jury to obtain evidence. And that is improper conduct, even under any circumstances. And I'm not saying that the case is wrong. I'm saying the case is correctly decided, and it's been expanded. And the courts have expanded to say you can obtain all of this new information. But there's a way of doing it. And the proper way of doing it is go in front of a judicial officer and say, Judge, I need this. And the judge says, okay, you can have it. And in this case,
well, if you find the case that says that, I would be very grateful, Mr. Stern, if you would send it to us.
I would ask that you make that decision, Your Honor, and indicate that that is the position, that if the judge, if the prosecution in federal and state prosecutions want evidence that's readily accessible, such as fingerprints, that they should have to go in front of a judicial officer. I don't think that issue's been decided.
What you're saying is that you want us to change the law then.
No, I think I want you to define the law. It would be the same improper conduct if, when they brought Mr. Trejo in to interrogate him, they said, Mr. Trejo, would you like a Coke? He says, yes, I'm thirsty, I'd like a Coke. They slide him over a glass of Coke, he drinks the Coke, they take the fingerprint off the glass, and they take the DNA off of the glass. That would be improper conduct. I'm not saying, Your Honor, that you can't obtain that evidence. It's the manner of which they obtained it is incorrect. The third issue deals with putting the names of the alleged people that spoke on the tapes that were submitted to the jury.
Then help me by distinguishing United States versus Brayman. That makes it quite clear that a court can permit a speaker's name to be included on transcripts based upon the lay testimony of a person who is familiar with the speaker's voice.
Relates to the second issue is now she's a lay witness. She's really not a lay witness. She's an expert. She's a government employee. So she is a government employee because when you look at the second issue, she went in to get evidence on behalf of the government employee. So you're having people wear a number of hats. She's wearing a hat as a government employee. She's wearing a hat as somebody who's providing evidence of who actually spoke. And she's testifying against Mr. Trejo all in one. And I think that...
Wasn't she able to identify his voice from sources, other sources?
I think if you look at the trial transcript, she was impeached about three times. I think she testified, and then there was a break in the trial, and then she came back and said she's under intense cross-examination, she said that she never made a mistake, and I think Mr. O'Daniel, on behalf of Savalas, who tried the Savalas 1 case, which was a meth case, said, didn't you misidentify some of the defendants in Savalas 1? And she said, oh, yeah, I did. And then we came back, and she found two or three more that she misidentified. So the problem you run into, Your Honor, is the fact, the overwhelmingness to a jury. And I think the court, it was in Good Shepherd, I think, said that at some point in time, you can't take the jury as a trier of fact. And you can't take away from the trier of fact, this man had, there was no way that this man, I see that the red light, or the, I would like to, if I can save some time for my rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear now from Mr. Blackington.
Just with regard to the three issues that are before the court today, The use of drug language, I think, as the court has indicated, I think the Sabalos 1 opinion is right on point about the use of English transcripts of Spanish conversations or permissible use, as well as the general proposition that agents can give expert testimony about drug code language, and the proposition that simple pronouns in certain circumstances, it and them, can constitute drug code language. The third argument with the identification of the speakers in the margin of the transcripts, the Breland opinion is right on point in that matter as well. I did want to spend a minute or two arguing the second issue, which relates to the voice identification by Gloria Rendon, who certainly should be considered a government agent. And I wanted to make sure that this identification was placed in context, because I don't think that my opposing counsel made it clear. Mr. Trejo Passeran was arrested with a valid arrest warrant. He was brought into the law enforcement office, and he was asked questions pertaining to basic booking information, which agents are allowed to do. Ms. Rendon participated in that interview as far as translating questions, as well as listening, certainly, to obtain voice identification. So, and I think that's important, because in this type of context, a Fourth Amendment violation can arise at two different levels. I think certainly the context in which the seizure, the acquisition of the evidence takes place, this is a different case if it's like defense counsel points out, that the government just grabs a guy, takes him to the station, takes him into a room, and starts talking to him about Coca-Cola and that type of thing. Then you have an unlawful seizure of the person, and I think the proper analysis is that evidence that's gathered may be fruit of the poisonous tree. But here we have a valid seizure of the person and valid questioning of the defendant to obtain basic booking information, which this circuit and every other court in the land permits. And then secondly, I think, is the nature of the search. If they swabbed him for a saliva sample to obtain DNA after arresting him, certainly that's intrusive. They couldn't do that. But the Dionisio case stands for the principle, as the court has indicated, that hey, you just don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy in your voice, that like fingerprints and other things. And that's I think the bottom line with this analysis, is that there is a valid seizure of the person and no reasonable expectation of privacy in someone's voice. And with that, I note the court's earlier admonition that we don't have the constitutional obligation to keep going, and but I don't have any further argument to make, but I'm certainly willing to answer any questions that the court may have.
I don't think so, Mr. Blackington. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You have 1 minute, sir.
Thank you. I don't think everything that's been said has been incorrect. I think that you can book individuals, and I'm not arguing about that, but the problem is when you're booking the individuals to gain evidence in a criminal investigation, I think that's improper conduct in violation of the Fourth Amendment. And that's my main rebuttal to that. I don't have anything additional. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Stern.
Thank you, judges.
And, sir, you served by appointment of the court, and you have the deep thanks of the court for your fine efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you, Judge.
Indeed, our thanks to both counsel this morning, and the case will be taken under advisement.